power of the ship's fusion generator vibrating within him, warming him, filling him with sensations he had never felt before linkage. He had a blazing man-made star within him. The electricity it generated was pulsing through him. The ship's wiring was his own nervous system. The ship's conduits were his own arteries and veins. He could sense the vibrations of the life support fans circulating the perfluorocarbon liquid through the ship's living space. Each light and display screen on the bridge's consoles was like an extension of his fingers. He felt the ship's sensors powering up, peering into the space outside the hull like searchlights from an ancient lighthouse sweeping a stormy seacoast. It took a concentrated effort of will to open his eyes and recognize that he was standing in front of his console on the bridge, feet anchored in the floor loops, flanked by Muzarawa and O'Hara, Karlsted on O'Hara's other side, Krebs floating behind him. O'Hara was at the communications console, with its multiple touchscreens staring at her like the eyes of a spider. Woe's chunky, intense face filled the central display screen. "Automated separation sequence begins in 15 seconds," the director was saying. 15 seconds, Krebs repeated, her voice flat, unemotional. If separating from the station and launching Shanghe into Jupiter's clouds excited her, she hid it completely. Grant licked his lips. The computer's synthesized voice began the final minute of countdown. "Power and propulsion," Krebs asked needlessly. She could see Grant's screens as easily as he could himself. "Power and propulsion all green," he said. "Life support, in the green," said Karlsted. "Communications, communications normal," O'Hara replied. "Sensors?" "All sensors on and functioning," reported Muzarawa. "We are ready for separation and launch," Krebs said to Woe's image. Precisely at that moment, the computer's voice announced, "Automated separation sequence initiated. Separation in 30 seconds. 29. The seconds stretched endlessly. Grant stood there, aware that he was breathing a cold, slimy, oxygenated liquid, but no longer caring about that. The ship was coming alive. Electrical currents racing through all its systems now, the propulsion units starting up, pumps beginning to stir, the electrons and the powerful superconducting coils singing their eternal hymn of perpetual motion, ceaseless devotion to their task. "Full internal power," Krebs said. 10 seconds, announced the computer. Grant could feel the MHD channel stirring into life. The magneto-hydrodynamic channels were preparing to take the star-hot plasma exhaust from the fusion generator and accelerate it through the ship's thruster tubes. Along his nerves, Grant felt the trembling thrill of anticipation. The clamps and bolts that held Shanghe to the station opened like a dozen faces breaking into smiles. Grant broke into a smile himself. "We're free," he knew. "We're on our own now." "Ignition!" The plasma thrusters started softly, gently. Grant felt their strength as if it was his own arms reaching out and lifting a heavy burden. As the thrust built up, his strength multiplied, tripled, quadrupled. He was stronger than any mere human could ever be, stronger than Sheena, stronger than a whole tribe of gorillas. He was lifting the entire ship, hurling it with fine, purposeful power and precision, flinging it away from the station and down into the waiting clouds of Jupiter. Better than sex? This was better than life. "I can rev up the thrusters to full power and blast this ship past Jupiter in an eye blink. I can push us out to the stars, to the farthest edge of the universe." Grant knew he had all the power of the universe throbbing inside him, superhuman energy, the strength and power of a god. That surge of arrogance snapped him back to reality. "Pride goeth before a fall," he heard his father's voice in his mind. "All this power, all this sensation of godlike strength is a trap, a snare, a temptation to the kind of hubris that has hurled many a good man into eternal damnation. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. He stood, trembling before his console, trying to regain control of himself, battling to keep the enormously seductive power of this illusion from deceiving him. "It's an electronic mirage," he told himself. "You are nothing more than a man who is linked electronically to the machinery of the ship. Control yourself." Still, he trembled. "Is this what wrecked the first mission?" Grant asked himself. "Is this linkage so overwhelming that someone ran amok with the ship's systems?" He had touched a place in his own mind where he had wanted to run wild with the plasma thrusters, push full throttle just for the sheer joy of power. Yes, he realized now. And if I'd done that, I would have killed us all. Still, he trembled. But now it was with the understanding of the enormous dangers that dwelled within his own mind, his own soul. It's the age-old war, he realized. The never-ending struggle between pleasure and responsibility, between good and evil. This ship is simply a new battlefield in that eternal war. As long as we're human, the war goes on. But for an instant, Grant knew he had been more than human. He still was. He still felt the pulsing power of the ship's generator and plasma thrusters. They were still a part of him. "I am the ship. Power requires responsibility," he told himself. "Extreme power requires extreme care."
Book 4. Why dost thou stand afar off, O Lord? Why dost thou hide thyself in times of trouble? Psalm 10.
Into the clouds. "Disconnect," Krebs ordered. Grant hovered uncertainly in the viscous perfluorocarbon atmosphere of the bridge, his feet anchored in the floor straps, his arms floating chest high, his mind battling against the seductions of power. "Disconnect," Krebs insisted. "Now!" The flight plan was for them to orbit Jupiter at least twice, long enough to make certain that all the ship's systems were indeed functioning properly. Only then would Krebs give the order to descend into the clouds. Grant turned off the linkage with all the reluctance of an addict withdrawing from his drugs. He was alone again, separate, nothing more than a blob of protoplasm inside a shell of flesh. "How do you feel?" Muzarawa asked as he slipped his feet free of the floor loops and bobbed gently in the viscous liquid. "A little shaky," Grant admitted. Karlstad floated up to them. "I don't see why we have to orbit around the damn planet like this. Why don't we stay linked and get on with the job?" "You must rest," Krebs answered from over their shoulders. "Eat. Take a nap. Staying linked with the ship for too long is not good." O'Hara, still at her comm console, said, "Captain, Dr. Woe wants to speak to you on the private channel." Krebs nodded and slipped a headset over her bald pate. "When does she sleep?" Karlstad whispered. Muzarawa nodded. "I don't think she's disconnected herself since we first linked up." Grant shrugged and headed for the food dispensers. He felt jumpy inside, weary yet keyed up. Maybe a nap is what I need. It still made him squeamish to plug the dispenser tube into the socket in his neck, but Grant did it. When the counter on the dispenser's metal face clunked and the flow of liquid shut off, he pulled the tube free with a shuddering grimace. "What's the matter? Doesn't it taste delicious?" Karlstad jibed. Grant headed for his berth without answering, leaving the three others huddled at the dispenser. Knowing that he'd have to be awake and alert in a few hours, Grant could not sleep. He kept thinking about the thrill of power he'd felt when linked to the ship. Will it get easier as we go on, he wondered? Or will it become more seductive, more corrupting? God help us, he prayed. Give us the strength to resist temptation. He thought about composing a message for Marjorie, even though he wouldn't be able to send it until they returned from this mission. If we return, he found himself thinking. Then he heard the other three come into the catacombs, talking quietly, grumbling, really.